programs you tuned to yesterday, bringing you programs from radio's golden years. Mark Levonier, your host for an hour of comedy. Later in the hour, homespun humor from Lum and Abner and Vic and Sade, but first, the Frontline Theater, an Armed Forces radio service broadcast called Someone Suitable from March 12, 1944.
It's the Frontline Theater. Frontline Theater presents an amusing comedy entitled Someone Suitable, starring Chester Morris and the attractive young screen actress K.T. Stevens. And for intermission entertainment, we have Horace Hite making music with his band of musical knights. Welcome to Frontline Theater, men. This is your theater, and every performance is presented especially for you, the men and women of the United Nations. But before we get into tonight's offering, here's Horace the Hite and his band of musical knights to play Besame Mucho.
Besame mucho. Each time I cling to your kiss, I hear music divine. Besame mucho. Hold me, my darling, and say that you will. This joy is something new, my arms enfolding you, never knew this thrill before. Who ever thought I'd be holding you close to me, whispering it's you I adore, dearest one. If you should leave me, each little dream would take wings and my life
of Someone Suitable, starring Chester Morris as Major Howard and K.T. Stevens as Gail Parmenter. As the house lights slowly fade and the curtain rises, we come upon a situation of surprise. When Major Howard came home on leave, he expected to see the twins, his 10-year-old motherless sons, racing around the station platform as usual, and plump Aunt Margaret, their nurse, lounging comfortably and characteristically somewhere in the background. Well, that's what he expected. Instead, he was met by a note. You can find me, the note said, at...
For the 10th time, I tell you, my Aunt Margaret's in there.
Holy mackerel, for 20 years I've been a stage doorman. But this is the first time I've ever seen a wolf busting into a burly Q theater to see his aunt.
But I, look, that's her station wagon parked at the curb.
With a blood bank sign on it?
Yes.
Ah, oh, now listen, chum.
And don't call me chum.
Okay, pal. Now, I tell you what you do. You go home now, see? And you take a cold bath. And then you say to yourself, I'm an officer and a gentleman. Am I showing the proper respect for my country's uniform, busting around chasing cuties?
Cuties? You don't know my Aunt Margaret. She's got a face like a stone lion and built like a flagpole.
Built like a...
A flagpole, a tall one.
Maybe you better chase cuties. Now, look here, pal. The chorus will be breaking for lunch any minute. Now, why don't you get out of here before it's too...
too late. Too late.
Margaret! Aunt Margaret!
Howie! Oh, land, I'm glad to see you.
Oh, well, it's good to see you, too.
Throw your bags in the station wagon.
Right.
Oh, Howie, I'm sorry about not meeting your train, but this was the only time I could sign these girls up as blood donors. Girls, come over here. Shake hands with Major Howard. He's just back from 18 months in the South Pacific.
Listen, Auntie, when a soldier's back from 18 months, you don't shake hands with him. You tucker up, Major.
Oh. Well,
now, he's a Lady Field, the aristocrat of Strip.
Well, really,
Charmed, I'm sure. And this is Gail. Come over here and kiss the Major, honey.
Oh, but I couldn't, honestly. Someone else.
Don't be a schoolmarm, Gail. Remember, 18 months.
Well, why not?
Break it up, Gail. You're holding up the line.
Well, really, now, really, I've got to be going.
I'm happy
to have met you all, I'm sure. We must see each other again sometime. Oh, blast it all, Aunt Margaret. Let's get out of here.
Well, Howie, you're home. Your own driveway. How did it look to you?
The driveway? Like it had been bombed.
Oh, the twins have been planting landmines again. They were the hairy engineers this morning.
Oh, I see.
Yesterday, they were commandos. I swear I can't keep up with
them. Look out!
Oh, another tank trap. Where are those kids?
Thank you, darn Nazis.
Come out of that tank or we'll spray you with liquid fire.
Liquid fire, my eye. You lay down that garden hose this instant. Look who's getting out of the car.
Hello, you two. You got a couple of bear hugs for your old man?
Oh,
golly. I guess you do it that.
Do what, Pop?
Oh, down there. I used to be afraid sometimes. You might not remember me.
I'd better go in and start lunch.
Hey, Pop, push me up this pole.
Yeah, me too, Pop.
Okay. Up you go. Now, what do you want to do up there?
And we gotta cut Mrs. Ellis's telephone wires.
Fine. Wow. You know, those kids are worse than 15 zeros patting the back of your neck. Aunt Margaret, you've done a wonderful job of mothering those two Indians.
Oh, forget it. Say, how long is your leave?
14 days. 13 now.
Short leave for a man who's got as much to do as you have.
Oh, well, all I have to do is sit in the sun and be the twins' target for tonight and eat the tempting, delicious meals you're going to serve me.
Oh, but suppose I'm not around to wait on you. I may be pretty busy myself.
Oh, well, the blood bank will give you some time off.
But the army won't.
Why, sure, they... What army?
What army? There's only one for me. It's usually known as the United States Army, and I'm joining it. They need nurses. I think I can get a captaincy.
That's the craziest thing I ever heard.
Oh, what's crazy about it? I nursed in France in 1918, didn't I? It's all fixed, Howie. I hear from my physical any day, and then I'm off.
But what about the twins?
Oh, I'll miss the little devils, but then you do too,
well,
don't
look,
you?
Of course I do, but, well, hang it, I'm a soldier.
Hang it, I'm a nurse.
Well, that's different. Now, soldiering's my job. I've worked at it from the day I entered West Point. Worked hard.
And what do you think I did all the years I was nursing? Played hopscotch?
But you've resigned from active duty.
So had MacArthur.
You have dependents.
You have.
Now, don't split hairs, Aunt Margaret. Can I have a pair of motherless twins kiting around after me in wartime to Lord knows where?
Can I?
I suppose you want those poor kids put in some institution.
Of course not. No more than you do.
Well, then who the devil is going to take care of them?
Your wife.
My wife? What wife?
I mean the wife you're going to marry within the next 14 days. I imagine you can find someone without much trouble. Someone suitable. Of course, you're not too bright, but the uniform gives you a surface appeal.
Now, hang it. Hang it, Aunt Margaret. Once and for all, I'm not getting married, and you're not turning into an army nurse. Is that clear?
No, it's merely loud. Now, look here, Howie. What's wrong with your getting married again? You've been a widower 5 years.
Yeah.
You're young. It's high time you found some nice young woman to share your life and mother the twins.
But I don't know anyone to marry.
Oh, I've got that all lined up. Now... There's the girl who teaches in the twin school.
Yes.
She has quite a way with children.
I see.
Then there's Mrs. Ellis next door. She's a young widow and very patient with the twins.
Oh, fine.
They play very nicely with her four.
Her four? How can you ask me to do such a thing? Now, where's your sense of romance?
In mothballs for the duration.
But a man should marry for love.
After the war, you can find out if you love her. If you don't, I suppose she'll give you a divorce. Then I can come back and take over the twins again. Well, when do you want to meet that school teacher? She's really the best I have to offer.
Oh, what's her name?
Abigail...
That's enough. That's enough. Now, you can keep your scrawny old-maid school moms, and now, if you'll excuse me, I'll go back to the twins. After you, they're soothing.
Sad about, Pop. You don't have to eat this custard.
I've got something tougher to swallow.
What do you mean, Pop?
Someone suitable. Huh. Oh, I'm sorry, kids. My mind was wandering. Where were we?
Sneaking up on that pillbox, Pop.
Huh? Oh, yes, yes. Well, you see, we couldn't make a dent on it from the front. But that night, we sneaked around the flank, found their rear unprotected, and smackle. Good Lord. Good Lord, why didn't I think of that before? Excuse me, kids.
Where are you going, Pop?
To the stage door of the Apollo Theater. You might say I'm sneaking around the flank. Hello, chum.
Huh? Oh, so it's you again.
Tell me, chum, when do the girls come out?
Any minute now, any minute. Look, don't tell me you're going to pull that anti-gag again.
No, no, this time I'm looking for my wife.
Your wife?
Mm-hmm.
I told you something like this would happen. Go home, I said. Go home and take a cold bath and say to yourself, I... What's her name?
Her name? Oh, I don't know.
You don't know? What's she look like?
Huh? Oh, I don't know yet.
You don't know...
Yet. Oh, but I'll recognize her, all right. You see, she hates children, especially like that little one over there. Oh, little girl. Little girl, come here.
What's cooking, good looking?
What's your name, little girl?
Slug.
Well, Slug, here's a dollar. Whenever you see me talking with a girl, you butt in and bother her.
Spit on her dress?
Well, no, no. Pull at her coat, bump into her, walk on her feet, ask her for a nickel or something.
I'll ask her for a nickel.
Here comes one now. Good afternoon, Lady Peels.
Why, I say, it's a nice major. Fancy me meeting you again so soon. How jolly. How's that?
Hey, lady, give me a nickel or I'll spit on your dress.
Oh, you dear, dear little girl child. Of course I'll give you a nickel. Here. Aren't children the darling little things, Major?
Yes.
I understand you have two of your own.
You like children?
I adore them. You know, Major, by a fortunate coincidence, I find myself unescorted at the moment.
Skip it. I mean, I'm terribly sorry. I have an appointment.
Well, toodle-do. And don't forget the name.
Well, what's the matter with her? She likes kids.
I know, that's just the trouble. Here's another try.
Well, hello there, Kissable. What brings you here, Major?
Give me a nickel, peroxide.
Here's a dime, little character. Buy yourself a beer.
Wouldn't be me you're waiting for, would it, Major?
No, I was afraid of that. Well, bye now.
Hey, look, listen, mister. It ain't that I'm curious.
Shut up. Here comes the last one. excuse me.
I'd rather you'd excuse me. You're dialing a wrong number, you know.
Oh, but we've met. You kissed me this morning, remember?
Oh, you're Margaret's Major.
That's right.
Hello again.
Give me a nickel, stuck up.
Go away. About this morning, Major Howard... I hope you weren't too embarrassed.
Give me a nickel.
Go away, I said.
No, no. In fact, I was wondering if you could have dinner with me tonight.
Why, yes, I'd love to.
Hey, stuck-up, if you like that dress, you better give me a nickel.
Take your dirty little paws off me. Do you want a spanking?
Well, lady, you asked for it. Duck.
Oh, look at my dress. Why, you rotten little brat. Take this, and this, and this. There. Now get out. And don't come near me again, ever.
You know, some children can be pretty annoying.
Some? All of them, it seems to me.
You know, you sound as though you didn't like children.
Sometimes I think if I never again saw a human being under the age of 14, I'd be the happiest woman in the world. Little brat. Now I suppose you hate me.
Oh, no, no, on the contrary. We were talking about dinner. I wonder if you could save all day tomorrow, too. You know, a drive in the country and so on. And if all goes well, there's someone I want you to meet.
And that was Act One of Someone Suitable, starring Chester Marlowe. Come out front now and watch Act Two of Someone Suitable, starring Chester Morris and K.T. Stevens. As the curtain rises and the house lights dim, we find that it is later in the same evening. The young major, his brass polished to a high blitz, his eyes gleaming to a sharp beam, is about to leave for a dinner date. He faces Aunt Margaret in the living room.
Well, Howie, what's gotten you all lit up? You're pretty chipper for a man whose spirit was broken forever a couple of hours ago.
Ah, but life is like that, Aunt Margaret. In the midst of despair, there's hope. And at the end of the rainbow, the pot of gold. I found it.
You found that bourbon I've been saving.
No, I found love. I met a girl downtown this afternoon.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I believe I'll ask you to marry me.
Well, is she someone suitable? I mean, is she suitable for the twins?
Huh? Oh, that. Well, what's the difference? It's me that's doing the marrying. She's an actress, of course.
An actress?
Well, a striptease artiste.
Oh, now you look here, Howie.
But returning to your question, unfortunately, no. No, she doesn't like children. In fact, she hates, despises, and abhors them.
What?
What is it she calls them? Oh, yes. She calls them rotten little brats. Neat, huh?
Oh. I begin to get the idea.
Of course, burlesque life does toughen a girl, but I think the love of a good man may reform her.
Oh, think you're smart, don't you?
Well, since you ask me, yes.
But you wouldn't dare go through with it.
Of course, we'd probably have to stow the twins in some nice institution. Her drinking spells, you know.
Oh. Howie, you're bluffing. You wouldn't marry a girl like that and leave the twins in her care.
Wouldn't I? Why, my, it's 7:45. Can't keep the little lady waiting, you know. She'd pick up someone else. And Aunt Margaret, by the way, I'll be spending all day tomorrow with her. That is, if her hangover isn't too severe.
Oh! Oh, dear.
That's the deepest sigh I ever heard. A nickel for your thoughts.
A nickel? The OPA won't like you. The ceiling price is a penny.
All right. A penny.
Oh, it's just... I love it out here. It's so peaceful. The whole day has been glorious. I've never been so happy.
Forget the ceiling. That's a 5-cent thought if I ever heard one. But why the sigh?
Well, I was wondering if we'd better be going. Way back this afternoon, you said there was someone you wanted me to meet.
Oh, yes, I remember, but things have changed since then.
Well, I'm glad. I could stay here forever, looking down at the lake and up at the stars.
You don't have to look up for the stars. They're in your eyes.
Why, you're actually poetic. You surprise me.
I'm the one who gets the surprises. I can't make you out. That business you're in, and yet you don't smoke and you won't drink. But you kissed me before we'd even met.
Ah, but I had to be persuaded. Remember?
Yes, I remember. By the way, what was the persuasion?
Oh, they said something about only 14 days leave.
Oh, only 12 days now.
It never failed.
Hmm? Oh, darling.
Oh, darling yourself. Why didn't we think of this before? Oh, what's the matter? Didn't you like it?
Yeah, I liked it too well. If you must know, I've fallen in love with you.
Is that bad?
Yes, very bad.
But why?
Because, oh, hang it, because you don't like children.
Oh, but I do, especially the twins.
Wait a minute, you know the twins?
Well, I ought to. They're in my class. Oh, I suppose I sounded hard with that little girl this afternoon, but I was just letting off steam.
Letting off steam?
A schoolteacher has to once in a while. Oh, it's the overdose of children you get in the winter.
All the pairs of little galoshes you take on and off, and all the snowsuits you button and unbutton, and all the little noses you wipe.
Yeah, but what were you doing down at the burlesque theater?
Getting blood donors with your Aunt Margaret. Why?
Well, this is wonderful. Could you arrange to marry me tomorrow morning?
Could I? What?
You're not paying attention. I said, could you arrange to marry me tomorrow morning?
Well, this is absurd. We only met yesterday. Well, you don't even know my last name.
Don't need to. You're almost through with it anyway.
You can't fall in love with anyone this quickly.
Can't you? I mean, can't you?
Well, yes, but that's different. We ought to, well, you know, think it over or something.
I guess I'll just have to fall back on the old persuader. Only 12 days left.
Oh, Don, here I go again. It's so crazy, but so right.
Well, here we are, darling. Tonight, my house. Tomorrow, ours. Come in and we'll break the news to Aunt Margaret.
Hello, Pop. Hello, Miss Farmington.
Hello, you
Hello,
two.
Kid.
Well, what are you tonight? Commandos?
No, we're not commandos.
Oh, we're spies.
Oh.
And we got important information. It must get through to headquarters at whatever cost.
I see. Well, meet Mata Hari. You can give your information to her while I go upstairs and get Aunt Margaret.
Well, boys, what's the
secret? We sneak around...
Greetings, you old queen-sized Cupid.
Well, so you're back from your prowling.
Ah, don't be like that, Aunt Margaret. She's wonderful. She's marvelous. She's the pin-up edition of Helen of Troy. She's... Well, in fact, she's downstairs to meet you.
Oh, then you can take her away again. You can't bluff me, Howie. You'll never ask her to marry you.
But I already have, a half hour ago.
You haven't?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, all right, you win. You don't have to get a mother for the twins. I'll stay.
But you don't get it, Aunt Margaret. We all win, you see. I get a wife, and what a wife. The twins get a mother, and you get your commission in the army. Come on downstairs and meet the future colonel's future lady.
Oh, I will, and you can wipe that silly grin off your face right now, because I'll have this strip queen out of this house in 10 seconds flat.
And you see, I can
meet her. Feast your eyes, Aunt Margaret. There she sits, right between the twins where she belongs.
Now, look here, young woman, you... Oh, you. Oh, thank heaven and glory be. Oh, the scare he gave me. Come here this instant and give your aunt-in-law a great big deal. What's the matter? You're as pale as a ghost.
Funny. I'd have said my face was red. The twins have been entertaining me.
Filled you full of important information, no doubt, huh?
Very important. There's only one more thing I need to know. Where's Aunt Margaret's shotgun?
Gail, what's wrong?
You are. You don't want to marry me. Aunt Margaret's forcing you into it.
Well, where did you get a crazy idea like that?
From your twins. They were spies, and I was Mata Hari. So I'm a scrawny old maid schoolmarm, am I?
Now, listen, Gail.
So the love of a good man will save me from my life of sin, will it?
Oh, hang it. That was before
Yes, but I'll do for a governess and nursemaid, won't I? Well, I'd have loved it if... But that's all you want. And when the war's over, you'll divorce me. With an adequate settlement, I trust. Oh, you're unspeakable.
Aren't you going to apologize, Pop?
Yeah, aren't you going to get down on your knees?
What he ought to do is get down on his stomach and crawl, a worm. Good night and goodbye.
Now you done it, Pop.
Yeah, now you done it. I bet she flunks the both of us in basket waving.
Was that the postman, Aunt Margaret? Anything for me?
Not the one you're looking for. Oh, darn it, Howie, can't you cheer up a little?
Oh, I know, but 3 days. She won't answer the phone, and my notes come back, and she won't even let a florist inside her door.
Oh, this is the letter I've been waiting for. Oh, no.
Well, Aunt Margaret, what's the matter?
Oh, look at this letter.
Well, this is terrific. Grab your hat, Maggie, darling.
Oh, don't rub it in,
Howie. Shut up and grab your hat. We're sneaking around the flank again. Hello, the John Marshall Grammar School?
How's it going?
Quiet, quiet.
The class is dismissed. Scram. Last one out on the playground is a Japanese.
You look here, Major Howard. If you think I'm going to stand here in my own classroom and be pushed around like
Stow it, darling. Now read this letter.
Take your arms away from me.
Oh, Gail, he still wants to marry you.
Naturally. I have a knack with children. And the love of a good man will patch up my shortcomings.
Oh, don't blather. Read that letter. That'll show you he's really in love with you.
He'll never, never, never make me believe that. What does the letter say?
It says, oh, well, that idiot of an army doctor turned me down. Said I'm 20 pounds underweight.
You see? Aunt Margaret will still be around to take care of the twins, so I'm not asking you to marry me for the twins' sake. Just for me.
But...
only 9 days left.
Oh, my darling. And you're sure you don't just want me as a mother for your children?
Well, not for these.
And so, down rings our end of the play curtain on tonight's Frontline Theater production, Someone Suitable. The role of Major Howard was played by Chester Morris, and the part of Gail Parmenter by Miss K.T. Stevens. Next week, Frontline Theater will present another radio play, and each week thereafter, you will hear radio versions of the best comedies, romances, dramas, and musicals with your favorite stars playing the leading roles. If you have any special play you want to hear in future performances, just drop a line to Frontline Theater, Armed Forces Radio, Los Angeles, USA. This is AFRS.
The Frontline Theater, on Tuned to Yesterday, from March 12, 1944, on the Armed Forces Radio Service. Leading man Chester Morris was also heard in that year on the NBC crime series Boston Blackie in the title role. This is an hour of comedy on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for an episode of Lum and Abner from their NBC Blue Network days, when they were heard 4 days a week at 6:30 in the evening. This episode broadcast live on June 12, 1942.
The makers of Alka-Seltzer bring you Lum and Abner. Folks, we wonder what your plans are for this weekend. You going to have a little time off for relaxation? Maybe you're planning a picnic or a party with friends, a round or two of golf, or a day of working around the yard in the garden. Well, whatever your plans, we hope they work out just fine. May we suggest that you keep a package of Alka-Seltzer tablets handy. And now, let's see what's going on down in Pine Ridge. Well, the old fellows finally discovered they didn't need a poetic license to write verses for their new greeting card business, so they're forging ahead in this enterprise. However, they were forced to interrupt their poetic activities long enough to attend a first aid class today. And so as we look in on the little community, we find Mousy Gray in charge of the Jot'em Down store and library, as well as the Edwards and Gray Publishing Company. Cedric Weehunt, who is still having trouble with his love life, has just entered. Listen.
Oh, hello, Cedric.
Hello, Mr. Mousy. Whereabouts are Mr. Lum and Mr. Abner at?
Why, they went to some kind of a first aid class, they said, Cedric.
Oh, well, I reckon I better be going then.
Well, maybe I can help you, Cedric. See, they left me in charge of both the store and the publishing company. Did you want to get some greeting cards?
No, Mom, I just want to say goodbye, that's all.
Goodbye? Are you going someplace, Cedric?
Yes, Mom, I'm going up in the hills and hermit myself, I think.
Hermit yourself? Well, what do you want to become a hermit for, Cedric?
Because I hate and despise Gomer Bates, that's why.
Gomer Bates? Is he still going with your girl, Clarabel?
Yes, Mom. I hope I never see him or Clarabel neither one again as long as I live. Hate and despise both of them.
Well, now, don't be too hasty and rash, Cedric. Why don't you have a nice long talk with Clarabel?
She won't talk to me. Just hangs up the telephone receiver when I call her.
Well?
I bound you she'll be sorry when she finds out I went and hermited myself, though, I'll bet you.
Well, that won't win her back for you, though, Cedric. That'll just give Gomer all the more chance to take her places.
No, I don't care. I've already picked out a cave for myself, and I'm heading for it right now, too, I bet you.
Well, are you really going to live in a cave, Cedric? Sleep there and everything?
Yes, Mom. I'm going to stay there all the time, I think.
Well,
except for meals. I'm coming home for my meals. Might sleep at home, too, if it gets too cold up there. Maybe I'll just be a daytime hermit.
Well, are you going to stay up there in between meals?
Yes, Mom. That is, if I have time. See, I have to come in town a couple of times a day.
Oh, to get your mail, huh?
Yes, Mom, and to play the pinball machine. I wish they'd made caves with pinball machines in them. That's what I wish.
Well, I think you're making a mistake, Cedric. I think that you should stay right here and fight for the woman you love.
There ain't no woman I love, though. I hate and despise her now.
Oh, no, you don't, Cedric. I can tell. You love Clarabel. When a fellow hates a girl, that's a sure sign that he's in love with her.
Sure enough.
Yes, it is, Cedric.
How do you know?
Oh, well, I know all that stuff, Cedric. See, I learned about life when I was an editor back in Iowa.
Editor?
Yes, sir.
I never knowed you was an editor.
Well, the Young Men's Saturday Afternoon Bicycle Group used to get out a little newspaper once a month, and I was editor of the Love Advice column.
Oh, well, that don't help me none.
Yes, it does, too, Cedric. Now, if you'll just wait till Lum and Abner come back, why, we'll go over to my house and read all the columns that I wrote, and maybe we can find a case just like yours in there.
Well, I can't wait, though. I got to get to my cave, I think.
Well, now, don't do that, Cedric. That's a mistake. You just stay right here and be firm.
Be firm?
Why, yes, that's the first advice that I always gave a young man. Be firm. Be dominant. Show Clarabel who the master is.
Master?
Yes, sir.
Who is a master?
Why, that's you, Cedric. Ooh. And you've got to prove that to her. That's the way that you can win her back. Be a caveman type.
Well, that's what I'm aiming on doing, going to live in a cave.
Well, I don't mean that. I mean use caveman tactics, Cedric. Be rough with them like I am.
Use caveman what?
Tactics.
Well, I can't even say that.
Well, that's just to act like a caveman, Cedric. That's what that is.
Tactics.
Yeah, be rough with them. That's the way I am, Cedric.
Are you rough, Mr. Mousie?
Oh, I'm awful rough. See, that's how I won Gussie for my bride. You can do the same thing, Cedric.
Yeah, but I don't want to win Gussie.
Well, I mean that you can do the same thing with Clarabel.
Oh, well, Clarabel won't talk to me long enough to give me time to get rough and tell her who the master is or nothing.
Well,
use
that's...
them tactics.
Well, you just have to be extra firm then, Cedric. Gussie wouldn't hardly talk to me at first. I tried my best to talk to her, and she just didn't want to have anything to do with me.
She never, huh?
No, sir. But
sort of like Miss Clarabel.
I didn't let that stop me, though, Cedric. I was dominant.
You was, huh?
I looked her right in the eye and said, "Woman, if you don't marry me, I'm going to beat you."
Did you sure enough say that to Miss Gussie?
Yes, sir. She just laughed and said that I was too little to beat her. Well, sir, that sort of made me mad, Cedric, and, well, the next thing I know, I raised my arm and struck her.
Did you actually hit her?
Yes, sir, I certainly did, Cedric.
What'd Miss Gussie do?
Well, the next thing I remember, she was picking me up off the floor, and then she kissed me.
Oh, kissed you?
Yeah. And now, why, she's Mrs. Llewellyn Snavely Gray.
I know you married her.
And a mighty fine housewife, too, Cedric. Seems just like a mother to me.
Well, that sounds like a good idea, Mr. Mousie, but I don't believe it'd work for me, though.
Well, why wouldn't it, Cedric?
Well, I don't think Clarabel could pick me up. I'm too big.
Well, that's not the idea, Cedric.
Reckon I better just go up to the cave and start Hermanton.
Well, now, wait, Cedric. You want to win Clarabelle back, don't you?
Well, yeah, I reckon.
Well, now, here's how to do it. You just go over to her house.
I don't want to go over there, though. Gomer Bates is more likely there, and I hate and despise him.
Well, in that case, why, the first thing to do is just break down the door, Cedric. Walk over to that Gomer Bates and pick him up and take...
Pick Gomer up?
Why, yes, sir. Pick him up and throw him right out of that house.
I thought Clarabelle was supposed to pick me up.
Well, no. You see, you've got that a little wrong, Cedric. See, after you've thrown Gomer out, why, then you pick Clarabelle up and throw her in a chair and say, "Woman, I love you. I'm the master."
Oh, I couldn't do that, Mr. Abner. Clarabelle would think I was touched.
Why, no, she wouldn't, Cedric.
I might hurt her, though, and then she'd get mad, sure enough.
Well, yes, she would get mad. Of course, they always act that way, Cedric, but really, they like it, I'll tell you that.
They do, huh?
Yes, sir.
Women are sure silly, ain't they?
Oh, yes, they are, Cedric.
Well, reckon I better get on up to my cave now. It's getting late.
Well, now, wait a minute, Cedric. Aren't you going over to Clarabelle's place and be dominant, like I said?
Well, I couldn't do that, Mr. Abner. I couldn't say none of that stuff.
You tickle me, Cedric. You keep calling me Abner all the time. I don't look like him.
Oh, I thought I was talking to Mr. Abner.
No.
Where is Mr. Abner?
He's over at the first aid meeting, Cedric.
Oh, that's right. You told me that once.
Yes, that's where he is, Cedric.
I couldn't say none of that stuff or throw her in a chair or nothing.
Why, yes, you could, Cedric. It's easy to learn. Honest it is.
I ain't much of a hand at learning. I don't catch on to things very quick, seems like.
You don't?
I'm more the hermit type, I believe.
Well, Cedric, now, I'll be glad to teach you. I'll tell you what, you can try it out on me, Cedric. You can just make out like that I'm Clarabelle.
Oh, Clarabelle's bigger than you, though.
Well, that doesn't matter. Now, all you do is just pick me up and throw me into Lum's rocking chair over there and then say, "Woman, I love you. I'm the master."
Oh, Huston Shuckins.
Oh, now, come on, Cedric. If you expect to win Clarabelle, why, you've just got this to do, Cedric.
All right, but I don't think it'll do no good, though, I don't think. Is this how I pick you up?
Yes. Now, don't hold me so high in air, though, Cedric. That's high enough. Well, now, that's high enough.
Here goes, into the chair.
Oh.
Woman, I love you. You're the master.
Oh, no, Cedric. That's not the way, Cedric.
Did I say it wrong?
Well, I don't know about that, but you threw me too hard, Cedric. Look there, you broke Lum's chair all to pieces.
I ain't supposed to do that, huh?
Why, no, of course not. Be firm, but gentle, Cedric.
Well, all right, I'll try it over again.
No, that's all right. You needn't bother, Cedric. Maybe you had better go and live in a cave after all.
No, I'm going to do this right. I'm bound and determined to learn it. I'll show that Gomer Bates a couple of things or two.
Well, wait a minute, Cedric. I don't think you're the type for this.
I believe I am. Sit still, Mr. Mouse Ear. I can't hold it. Get hold
of it. Well, now, Cedric, don't pick me up. I can get up by myself.
Here we go, Mouse.
Now, Cedric, put me down. Now, please, Cedric,
I'll use Mr. Abner's chair this time.
Please put me down, Cedric.
Don't worry, Mouse. I'll get it right this time.
Howdy, Mouse. Do everything. Well, for the land's sake, look at there, Lum.
Grannies, what's going on here anyway? Who broke them chairs?
Get up off the floor, Mousie.
Hello, Mr. Lum, Mr. Abner.
What you fellas been doing here, Cedric?
Well, Mr. Mousie's learned me how to be firm and domino and win back Clarabelle.
Yeah, but what's wrong with Mousie? Looks like he's hurt.
I am hurt, Abner.
Grannies, Abner, this looks like a good chance to use that first aid stuff we've just been learning.
Yeah, lucky thing we went to that class today,
yeah.
Mousie. Whereabouts are you hurt?
It's my wrist, Abner. I think I've sprained it.
Sprained wrist, huh?
Yes, sir.
I see. We never taken up sprained wrist today, did we, Abner?
No, we never got that far. I reckon we'll have to go back over to class, Lum.
No, we ain't got time to do that, Shelly.
Oh.
I never meant to hurt him none. It was his own idea. He told me to pick him up and throw him down.
Is that the way this happened, Cedric?
Yes, Mom.
Well, here, I doggies, I know what we can do then. Here, Cedric, pick up Mouse again there.
Yes, Mom.
Well, what are we going to do, Abner?
Now, don't worry. I've got it all figured out. You ready, Cedric?
Yeah, what you want me to do now?
Now, throw him down again, and this time try to sprain his ankle. We know what to do for that.
Friends, why run the risk of a vitamin B deficiency and its consequences when it's so easy and so economical to guard against it with one-a-day brand vitamin B complex tablets? Lum and Abner are brought to you 4 days a week at the same time. Consult your local newspaper. Lou Crosby speaking. This is the Blue Network.
Lum and Abner on Tuned 2 yesterday from the NBC Blue Network heard on the 12th of June, 1942. We now wrap this hour of comedy on the homespun front with an episode of Vic and Sade. This endearing series, also from NBC's Blue Network, and heard on February 17th, 1942.
Smile again with radio's home folks, Vic and Sade, written by Paul Wright.
Teddy, now I'll have it all done and can have the evening free for other activities.
Moving picture show, huh?
Beg pardon?
I think you're trying out that school book afternoons for show.
I'm afraid I don't grasp the connection.
You come home from school of an afternoon and sit yourself all fancy and important at the library table with your algebra. Then after supper, you give us a spiel about how you've got your studying all done and would like to take in the Bible.
Why, what a fantastic notion.
Yeah.
Sometimes, Mom, I greatly fear you have a strain of suspicion in your makeup.
Here's your father home. Hi.
Is that my darling Teddy who spoke?
Yeah.
I go.
And now it's my darling Russ speaking. Good
humor. Uh-huh. Here's a good movie on at the Bible, now that you happen to mention it.
Huh?
Growing a golden and four-fisted Frank Buttleman in... Take this throbbing heart of mine, assistant Strawboss Williamson.
My darling Sadie, my darling Rush, it is heaven on earth to see you once again.
Your Tom Hank Upstock get a hold of you?
Yes.
Weren't you in your office this afternoon? You telephoned 3 times.
I was in the boxing department checking over some materials. I didn't mention to Miss Hammerstreet where I was going, so I expect she assumed I'd gone home. Where are we eating supper tonight?
How'd the kitchen table be?
Kitchen table?
Where do we generally eat?
Oh, yeah, that was a foolish question. The reason I spoke, how would you people like to have Papa take you out to something?
Fine.
What's the idea?
Well, I just as soon treat you guys to a restaurant meal, and in doing so, I'm doing a favor for a friend.
Can't gut stuff?
Yeah.
What's the angle this trip?
By George, Mom, you talk just like the kids at school.
I pick up slang off of you. Catch myself talking funny in front of the Thimble Club ladies sometimes.
Uh-huh.
What's old Hank got up his sleeve this trip?
Hank, you'll be pleased to learn, has a job.
Again?
You know a Mrs. Isler Grace?
No.
She's the lady who recently opened up the restaurant there on the corner of Monroe and Madison Street.
Oh, where you went with Mr. Bohr?
The same. What's the name of it, Harry? The little tiny something or other?
The little tiny petite pheasant feather tea shoppy.
Yeah.
Hank, that stop working there?
Mrs. Grice is employing them on a temporary basis. However, if he makes good, she intends to offer him a permanent position.
What's he do, Gov Cook?
He is...
host. What?
Hank is host.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I knew it was going to laugh.
I bet Hank is the prettiest hostess in town.
I knew it was going to laugh. The term hostess is just a name. Actually, Hank is the official greeter for the little tiny...
The little tiny petite pheasant feather tea shoppy.
Yeah. Hank will accost patrons at the door and bid them good evening, take their wraps, and escort them to their tables.
They only got 3 tables.
You haven't eaten there, have you, son?
No, but Bluetooth Johnson and myself peeked in the window the other day. They only got 3 tables.
If the establishment flourishes through the efforts of Hank and business starts booming, Mrs. Grice may expand and have 10 tables, 20 tables.
Well, why don't this Mrs. Grice be her own hostess?
She has only 2 hands.
How do you mean?
She cooks the food and serves it. That's enough to keep any one person busy. Hank, in addition to his duties as hostess, will present the customers' bills to him and collect the money. Also, he'll hover around inquiring if people find everything okay, isn't the soup delicious, and all such junk as that. He'll lend tone and color to the joint.
I'll see.
When his finances allow it, he plans to acquire a swallowtail coat and striped pants.
I never thought I'd see the day when Hank Gustav would turn into a hostess. A hostess in a tea shop. See, the times I generally run across him, he's either sleeping on the Illinois Central Railroad Station platform or sleeping in the courthouse yard or skulking out in front of the Lazy Hours pool parlor. And here he is, the hostess at the little tiny petite pheasant feather tea shopping.
The ugly duckling has turned into a swan.
Yes, indeed.
Well, shall we go there this evening and eat?
All right.
Fine. I bet we enjoy a delicious supper.
Well, will us going there help, Hank?
You bet your life. His real function at the restaurant, as you may have divined, is to bring in business. He hopes to bring lots and lots of people into the tea shop. If business booms, why, Mrs. Christ will pay him a salary.
Salary?
Yeah.
What's she paying him now?
Meals.
Oh.
She gives him his meals, see? Uh-huh. If Hank is successful in building up patronage, he'll receive good hard cash.
When does he start to work, Gus?
He starts today. We will be among his first customers.
Seeing room for many customers, only 3 tables.
Who knows? The day might come when that restaurant boasts 20 tables.
It'll be awful darn crowded.
If we do go eat there this evening, Vic.
Yes?
Oh, we won't have to come around with that, Hank, will we?
We'll meet him in his official capacity of hostess, is all. He'll greet us at the door, perhaps shake hands, bid us good evening, seat us at a desirable table, put our napkins in our lap, take our order, and generally make himself affable and pleasant.
Well, I don't like the man, and I don't want to chum around with him.
You don't chum around with the head waiter at the Butterhouse Hotel, do you?
Uh-uh.
Hank will be as discreet and tactful as the head waiter at the Butterhouse Hotel is. He will hover about us while we eat, and nod, and smile, and be on the alert to do your business.
Some more ketchup, Mrs. Gunn?
Yes.
You find difficulty making any salt come out of that salt cellar, do you, sir? I'm afraid it's the damp weather gums it up. One moment, please, while I run to the kitchen and fetch a salt cellar where the salt really comes out.
Well.
Hold on there, Miss Gook. Let me wipe the gravy off on your chin. My, what pretty blue eyes. Do you think I'm a nice hostess? Darn this shoe of mine. Look at it all untied. Well, I guess I'll go get a shave and haircut.
You're supposed to be witty,
Hank. Just imitating Hank Gustop is all.
Well, don't imitate Hank Gustop anymore, please, Rush. He's a good boy.
How much is the meal that's a little tiny feather to weather?
35 cents. That's a set price and pays for a set dinner. Everybody eats the same thing. See, the establishment is extremely modest and operates on quite a small scale. Until business flourishes, they can't offer their patrons much variety. For your 35 cents, you get soup, meat, potatoes, beverage, 2 vegetables, salad, and dessert. Ms. Greishang tells me he's an excellent cook and her food is very tasty. And here's another thing. A person reflecting on the name Little Tiny Petite Pheasant Feathered Tea Shoppy might be inclined to feel that their servings would naturally be small.
Yeah. You think of dinky thin sandwiches with the crust cut off and teeny little hunk of pineapple with a cherry on top and coffee cups about a third the size of regular coffee
cups. Exactly. But Hank tells me the servings at Mrs. Ryan's place are quite substantial.
Well, he won't eat with us or anything, will he?
Who's it?
Hank.
Eat with
us? Well, I was thinking that as long as he's working for his meals and here come along some friends of his that he's enticed into the restaurant, he might collect his pay right there on the spot and tell Mrs. What's-Name to slap some meat and potatoes
on
the table.
Oh, Sadie.
Well, I wouldn't put it past him.
Sadie.
I wouldn't put it a bit past him.
I think we can rely on Hank's tact and discretion.
Hank got to stop our hostess.
You can use the term official greeter if it strikes you as more suitable.
Yeah.
You must wash your neck before you go out to dine this evening, Rush, my boy.
My neck's okay.
There's a suspicion of griminess, I fear.
No, Vic, I just as soon go and all. In fact, I want to go. I'm interested in tea shops. But if I thought I had to chum around with that old Hank,
you won't have to chum around with Hank. You will meet Hank only in his official status as hostess. I guarantee that.
Top one drink.
Yeah, will you, Willie?
Most likely it's a good old pain in the neck. You take Frank Papp and I'll take Vanilla, Reliable Bluetooth Johnson.
Hello? Yes, I believe he is. 1 second.
Like me, sir?
Thank God, stuff, I think. I could hear billiard balls clicking around.
Okay, one side.
Thank God, stuff. A hostess at the little tiny petite pheasant feather tea shop.
Hello? Hiya, Hank. Oh? What do you mean? Well, what happened? Oh? I see. Well, okay, Hank. Yeah. So long, Hank.
Shucks. What's the matter?
What are we going to have for supper?
Supper?
We're eating here at home.
Are we?
Yeah.
Hank, what are the hostess business?
He has severed connections with the little tiny petite pheasant feather tea shoppy, or perhaps more correctly, the little tiny petite pheasant feather tea shoppy has severed connections with Hank.
He have a quarrel with Mrs. What's-her-name that runs it?
Words were passed between them, Hank, give me the understanding. Hank got ahead of himself.
Oh?
He was working for his meals, you know. Today was his first day.
Yes.
Not yet 5 o'clock, and already Hank is...
Yes.
Eating 6 meals.
My land.
It's not yet 5 o'clock, and already Hank is eating 6 meals.
Goodness.
Mrs. Grice felt that it was an unprofitable setup for herself and her restaurant.
Well, I should hope.
So, Hank Goodstuff is no longer hostess at the little tiny petite pheasant feather tea shop. Hank Goodstuff is no longer hostess at the little tiny petite pheasant feather tea shop.
Vic and Sade on Tuned to Yesterday, Household Names during Radio's Yesteryear, that NBC episode from February 17, 1942. And that brings to a close this hour of comedy on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from Radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.